ओम ज्ञान तिमिरांधस्य ज्ञानंजन शलाकया चक्षुर निमित्तं येन तस्मै श्री गुरवे नमः. May there be good fortune throughout the universe, and may all envious persons be pacified. May all living entities become calm by practicing bhakti yoga, for by accepting devotional service they will think of each other's welfare. Therefore, let us all engage in the service of the Supreme Transcendence Lord Sri Krishna, and always remain absorbed in thought of Him. This Srila Prabhupada points out in his purport. First thing, what is the character of a devotee? Devotee means, because he's cleansed his mind by worshipping Krishna, he can only think of the welfare of others. And Prahlad's behavior exemplifies what is the ideal of a Vaishnava. If only our behavior exemplified what is the ideal of a Vaishnava. We talk about these things, but example is better than precept. So we worship Prahlad Maharaj, and we're very fortunate that Prahlad Maharaj is praying for us. If we're making any advancement in Krishna consciousness at all, it's only because devotees like Prahlad are already praying for us. In this verse we see very clearly, Kala Prasidatam, may even the envious persons be pacified. We are all envious in this world. Everyone is envious. So, Kala Prasidatam, may thee be pacified. What does that mean? According to Sridhar Swami, the Bhagavatam commentator, as well as Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur and other acharyas, it means Krauryam Tyajatu. May they give up their cruelty. When we're envious, we're cruel. We cannot be cruel unless we're envious. Others say, Viragava Acharya says, Durmati prasanno bhavet. May the foolish persons become pacified. Durmati, or evil persons, you can say. People with ill intentions, you can say. Bad minds, bad intelligence. And krodhadikam parityajya sumatir bhavatu. May they become sumati. We're not durmati, let us become sumati. How in the world do we do that? The acharyas have raised this question when they comment on this verse. An envious person can never think of the welfare of other people. So how in the world is this going to happen, that the envious persons will be pacified? He says, Manashta bhadram. And Viragava Acharya as well as Srihar Swami say that this means upashamadikam, may the mind be peaceful, pacified. And Vijayadvaj Tirtha takes it a step further. He says, sakala mangala rupam harim, nariharim. May they think of the all auspicious form of the Lord. Vishnath Chakravarti Thakur, he says bhadram, or auspicious, means anasaktim taravibhaktim vina bhadramadhya bhadrameva. The only thing that's really auspicious is when we practice bhakti that is without any attachment for any mundane motives. And this is exactly what Prahlad is praying for. If we practice this bhakti yoga process, then we are able to think of others' welfare. Bhutani cha mitha Shivameva Dhyayantu, Sridhar Swami says. Or, Bhadrani Uddishya Nriharam Dhyayantu, Vijayadvaj Tirtha from the Madhva Sampradaya. He says it means we have the intention, the auspicious intention of meditating on Nrihari. Who is Nrihari? Lord Narasingha, the Lord's half-man, half-lion incarnation. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says, Sadhum apirayatam api paraspara vairanam bhutanam paraspara ghatam vina swasti. We'll stop killing each other, we'll stop thinking ill of each other, we'll stop harassing other devotees. This is what it means, manascha bhadram bhajatat, by worshipping the Lord. And another acharya, Goswami Giridhari Lal, he says, Sarvani eva bhutani mitha parasparam shivam mangalam dhyayantu. Same idea. So Dhiya, the word is used here. Dhyayantu bhutani shivam mitho dhiya. The Jayatwaj Tirtha says this means shastramananena upasana lakshana dhyanena cha. Using our intelligence means to read the shastras. You have to open these books. The book that I'm reading was shrink-wrapped this morning before I brought it here. There's a joke about this. Bhagavad Gita as it is. People respect Bhagavad Gita. They buy Bhagavad Gita. They sometimes even distribute Bhagavad Gita, but they don't open Bhagavad Gita. So in chapter 4 of Bhagavad Gita, text number 10, all the acharyas commenting on that verse say that bahavo jnana tapasa puta, many, many births of austerities, they become purified. After many births of austerity. So what is that austerity? Beginning with Ramanujacharya, he says, austerity means that first of all, you take the trouble to study the shastras. Because you have to take some time out, you have to prioritize it. It's a hassle to some extent. So you take that austerity and you do that. And then the really interesting part is that once you actually develop this knowledge, once your mind becomes auspicious, as Vijayatvaj Tirtha says here, you shastra mananena upasana lakshana dhyana, you fix your mind in meditation on the Lord with the intent to worship Him in this way. So after one has taken the trouble to open the shastra, Bhagavad Gita, and to read Bhagavad Gita, then one meditates on how I'm going to worship the Lord with the knowledge I've gotten. And Ramanujacharya says that is the next aspect of what makes this knowledge austere. We may have experienced, we've all experienced to some degree in this world, when you give a good instruction, sometimes people don't appreciate good instructions, isn't it? Sometimes if a person is harming themselves and you let them know this, they get angry because of envy. Therefore, he says here, manasya bhadram bhajat aradhokshaje. Part of this kala prasidatam idea that all the demons should be pacified, Srila Prabhupada mentions here that a snake is by nature envious. Snakes, they just bite people for no reason. You just, in the vicinity of a snake, it will bite you. And he said sometimes people become like this also. But the difference is that a snake can be conquered by mantras or by some medicine. You don't conquer snakes by flattering them or feeding them. If you feed milk and bananas to a snake, what happens? The visha increases. The poison of the snake only increases. So if we flatter rascals, or if we humor rascals, or deal with them in a very sweet way, we're just empowering them. This is the concern of all the acharyas commenting on this verse. Swasti astu vishvasya means, may the whole universe be auspicious. But wait a minute. Beginning with Sridhar Swami, they raise the objection. If the whole universe is empowered in this way, then that means all the demons within the universe will also be empowered. And that causes problems because the demons are harassing even us. What to speak of other people? Therefore, he says, kala prasidatam. May these snakes be pacified. May these envious persons be pacified. And then he gives the process. Jayantu bhutani shivam mitho dhiya. They may think of each other's welfare using their intelligence. And according to Vijayatvaj Tirtha, that means you open the books, you read the books, you consider how to apply those books. This is worship of Bhagavan. When we do this, manasya bhadram bhajatat arokshaje, our minds become auspicious. Hote hote. It takes some time. It's not going to happen overnight. You have to be patient. You have to be determined. You have to be enthusiastic. You have to follow strictly. You have to watch your association. And you have to follow in the footsteps of those who have succeeded before you. If we follow these guidelines, then very quickly, even one lifetime is considered to be very quick in the eternal scope of things. How long have we been here? forever, virtually forever. Anadikal, they say, beginningless time. So it can't be easy to purify the mind of timeless accumulation of dirt. But this is the best way to do so. Pajatarad hokshaje. What does adhokshaje mean? According to Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, adhokshaje is the name of Lord Krishna. It certainly is one of the thousand names of Lord Vishnu that we find in Mahabharata. So, by worshipping Lord Krishna, and adeshyatam, adeshyatam means to get into it, literally. Avesh means to enter something, to really dive deep into this bhakti rasamrit sindhu, the ocean of the nectar of devotion. When we become like deep water fish swimming in that ocean, deep, diving deep. Why do we dive deep? What happens if you don't dive deep? The water is nice and warm up on the top. So let's stay up there. But what happens? Here we don't have an ocean, so people don't know. If you grow up on the ocean side, then you know what happens. The little fishies that are curious and swimming around on the top of the water, there are these pelicans that are hovering over, and they've got very sharp eyesight. They can see everything that's under the water. They're scoping the place out. And as soon as some curious little fishy comes up and tries to enjoy the nice warm water on top, finished. They dive down like a kamikaze. They open their big beak and there's a pouch inside, just made for fish only. This is the divine arrangement. Jivo jivasya jivanam. One living entity is food for another. That is the law of this world. As long as we remain in animal consciousness, that is what we have to deal with. Therefore, there's fear at every step. So, it's a good idea to dive deep, because then there are no more predators. What kind of predators? Well, we have insidious ideologies that distract our minds. We have sensual temptations that distract our senses. We have the influence of bad people who are not thinking of our welfare because they still envy us. All these are dangerous things. Just like these birds that attack the fish. But if you're diving deep in the ocean of bhakti, then they cannot reach you. So, aveshyatam, naha, matir. So, naha means ours, asmakam. And different acharyas say different things about it. It means sarvesham matir. May the intelligence of everyone in the whole world, everybody's intelligence. Prahlad Maharaj is praying, all these people in the world, may they all pray along with me for this thing. This is his prayer is like this. And then he says, api, aveshyatam no api ahaitaki. What does api mean? Anybody know? Huh? Sometimes means also, usually means what? Even. May even we pray for this. Why even we? Who is Prahlad? Who is his father? Hiranyakashipu. Was he an Aditya? He was a Daitya. Daitya means he's a demon. That means technically, if we go by birth consideration, Prahlad is a demon. And out of humility, he considers himself like that. Maybe even I can pray like this. This is not the first time that he says this in the Srimad Bhagavatam. There's at least one other verse, maybe two other verses in which he prays likewise. Even I can offer prayers, he says, because I'm part and parcel of the Supreme Lord. All of us, no matter what our background, no matter where we've come from. Some of us are coming from Swarga Loka. Some of us are coming from hell. It doesn't matter. Everybody who understands this verse can make the decision to dive deep into the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. And your mind will become purified by this. In that way, you'll stop envying those around you. And your mind will become auspicious. You'll only think of others' welfare. In this way, kala prasidatam. We become pacified. And swasti astu. In this way, there will be auspiciousness for the entire universe. Now, the last word of the verse, ahaitaki. What does ahaitaki mean? Yeah, koi hetu nahi. There's no agenda, there's no motive, there's no expectations. This is what the word hetu means. Ahetuki. Actually, different acharyas have defined it in different ways. Sridhar Swami, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, and Goswami Giritari Lal, they all say, ahetuki means nishkama. What does nishkama mean? No material desires. Viraghavacharya and Vijayatvachitirtha, they take it slightly differently, but harmonious interpretation. Palabhi sandhi rahita. Palabhi sandhi rahita. There is no connection with any kind of fruitive intention here. As he said, no expectations. When our devotion is like this, then we will see this result. As long as we are praying to God for, as Prabhupada used to say, sometimes they pray for daily bread. And Prabhupada said, this is not love of God, this is love of bread. So, palabhi sandhirahita means that we don't have any intention. And Prabhupada has pointed out for us here. Prahlad is praying like this, but he's not praying for anything for himself. He's only praying for us. That's why we're all sitting here today. Only by his grace. And the grace of other Vaishnavas like him, such as his divine grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. So Srila Prabhupada's purport, he talks about three kinds of beings. There are gentle persons, envious persons, and mischievous persons, but the devotees care about all of them. And actually this Srimad Bhagavatam is meant for Paramahamsas who are freed from envy. Therefore Prahlad is praying in the last prayer, please cleanse our hearts of the desire for demoniac desires for material activity. He's praying like this so that we can actually become Paramahamsas. We should ask for a benediction when we pray. We should not worship the Lord without praying, and we should not pray without asking a benediction. We should ask. But what we ask for should be very high caliber like this. Selfless. Ahetuki. This is what changes us. This is what changes us. And Srila Prabhupada says he feels that ISKCON's relevance is to bring about this change of heart. If we ourselves are doing this, then anyone who associates with us will also be attracted to this process. It's visceral. It's not even something that has to be stated explicitly. Just by association. Otherwise, how is it so? Lava matra sadhu sangha sarvasiddhi hoy. Even a split second association with a bhakta, you can become so purified. You can get every kind of perfection. So Krishna consciousness makes us think of God. And this is what purifies our hearts. Now, in the very end, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, Srila Prabhupada has mentioned, he raises this doubt. Okay, if everybody becomes Krishna conscious like this, then the whole world will become devoid of living entities, correct? Is it? Some people are saying yes. Yes. No. No. Because the living entities are eternal, the material energy is also eternal, the process of entanglement is also eternal. If we pull ourselves out by the divine grace of the devotees, like Prahlad, or like Srila Prabhupada, then that's good for us. But a whole new batch will come in. A whole new batch comes in, and they have to go through the same process. So what does this mean practically for all of us? If we ourselves go back to Godhead by following the instructions in this verse and becoming pure devotees, then what about everybody else? Should we not learn from the example of Prahlad and think about them as well? Therefore, the real conclusion is that there's always going to be service for us to perform in this material world, because there will always be people coming into this material world to try to exploit it. And they need to be helped. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was given this instruction. Always we are emphasizing this point. Bharata bhumite hoilo manushya janmajar janmashartha kori korapar upakar. When you are born in India especially, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says, janma shartha kori, make your own life perfect first. Become, in other words, become Krishna conscious, really Krishna conscious, like this verse describes. Do that first. Once you have done that, then Paropokar. Then you can think about other people. In Los Angeles, Srila Prabhupada had, somebody had given him a nice, you know, these nice expensive pens, Parker pen. I don't know if they still make them or not. Parker pen. And Prabhupada one day was looking at his pen. The name Parker was printed on the pen. And Prabhupada thought, Parkar. He said, this pen is meant for this mission. Parkar. You have to help other people. This is his transcendental vision. So Srila Prabhupada is the example for the modern world of how to apply this verse. Actually, how to assimilate this verse, how to apply the verse. Srila Prabhupada was only engaged in Krishna conscious activities, and he was very much industrious about helping other people to adopt the same process. He gave his life while we were all sleeping, those of us who were born yet. Srila Prabhupada was writing these books that we're reading this afternoon. In exactly the same way that Prahlad prayed for us how many thousands of years ago, and it's recorded here in the Srimad Bhagavatam, Srila Prabhupada worked hard all through the night to translate these books and write the commentaries on these books. And we're sitting here today hearing from these things. Now we have the responsibility to do the same thing. We have the responsibility to do the same thing. Janmasharthakuri Kodaparapakar. Okay, I'm going to stop here, but if anybody has any questions or any comments on any of this, I'll repeat both verses, since we more or less talked about two verses. He says, Prahlad is praying, along with other residents of Harivarsha, to Lord Narasingha. I offer my respectful obeisances unto Lord Narasingha, the source of all power. O my Lord, who possesses nails and teeth just like thunderbolts, kindly vanquish our demon-like desires for fruitive activity in this material world. Please appear in our hearts and drive away our ignorance, so that by your mercy we may become fearless in the struggle for existence in this material world. May there be good fortune throughout the universe, and may all envious persons be pacified. May all living entities become calm by practicing bhakti yoga, for by accepting devotional service they will think of each other's welfare. Therefore, let us all engage in the service of the Supreme Transcendence, Lord Sri Krishna, and always remain absorbed in thought of Him. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. No questions or comments? Yes?
Okay. You give some example of kind of predators that attend to those who swim in the shallow water. Is it possible for you to also give us some examples of those predators that go to the deep waters?
Yeah, I mentioned a couple of them. The standards that are given in our literature are the karmis and the gyanis and the yogis who would distract us from practicing pure bhakti. Nowadays, almost no one practices karma. What does karma mean?
Action.
Huh?
Action.
No.
Good work.
Fruitive activity. And especially it means pious fruitive activity. But nobody's pious. Everybody is committing sinful activities. Everybody is committing sinful activities. All of us. Our whole default mode of existence, the whole lifestyle which is currently destroying this planet, it is sinful. This is the default. Abodha jata means we're born into this ignorance. So that's one thing. Whether we're pious or sinful, we happen to be sinful, but in either case, we have to bring ourselves above this very tightly tied knot of attachment to fruitive activity, working for some particular result for ourselves, selfishness. So that's one. Anybody who's going to encourage that in us, that is one of these predatory birds that can attack us if we're just playing in the shallow water of bhakti without diving deep. We can be pulled out so easily. I've seen it happen so many times over the last 40 or so years. So, a little bit more elevated than that is the yogis. There are not hardly any yogis also in today's world. There are plenty of businessmen in the dress of yogis. But yogis are interested in siddhis. That means some mystic perfection. Once when I was in Hardwar, believe it or not, I saw a big crowd of people on the bank of the Ganga. So I went to see what is the crowd all about, and there was a yogi there. Someone handed him an empty bottle of Limca. I don't know if they make bottles of Limca anymore. But he took this bottle of Limca in his hand and he just went shh, and he reduced it to a pile of powder and just poured it out in the sand. So this is mystic siddhi of some sort. By his yogic perfection he could do this. But what is the point? He's still going to die. And where is he going? You want to spend the rest of eternity reducing Limca bottles into glass dust? So these are the yogis, and the gyanis are a little bit more elevated. The gyanis at least have recognized that even if I'm pious, what to speak of sinful, there's no point because my pious activities are going to run out, just like my sinful activities eventually exhaust themselves. So you go up, you go down, you go back up again, then you go back down again, then you go up, down, what is the point? This is described in Mundaka Upanishad. A thoughtful person, he develops some detachment from this. This is called jnana. He realizes this thing is going nowhere. Let me understand what's really true, what's behind all this, what's eternal, what's the absolute truth. This is jnana. But even that jnana, if it is non-devotional, it is actually our enemy. Because what is our swarup? Muktir hitvanyatha rupam swarupena vyavasthitihi. In the Srimad Bhagavatam it's described. Mukti or liberation actually means to throw off all extraneous identities, upadhis, that's artificial designations, impositions, to throw off all these things, false ego. And the material body is included in that. It's essentially, it's foreign to us. We're like, with an example is often given, like fish. We belong in the water. But when you take a fish on the land, no matter how much you give the fish, it's not going to be happy because it doesn't belong on the land. It needs water. We're like that. So jnanis, they have understood that they should not be on land, but they have not understood that they should be in the water yet. So what is the point of that? What is the point? And because this jnana is much more subtle and because being spiritual in nature, it is more attractive actually to a sensitive person. So it's like a snake with a jewel on the hood. It's more attractive because of the jewel. So the danger is increased. You can get bitten trying to get that jewel. So jnana is like that. Karma, yoga, jnana, these non-devotional alternatives, they won't really help us. And anybody who's espousing any of these paths, these are the predators. So we should dive deep into the bhakti ocean instead. Rupa Goswami says that bhakti is like an ocean of nectar, and the devotees are like the fish enjoying in that ocean. The deeper you dive, the more sweet it becomes. Is that okay? Anything else? Yes.
So when you said every time the people are coming down and people are going up, it never ends up. So what is the motivation of a devotee? You know, if sometimes we must be coming back. Is it like that? Or like?
What motivates a devotee if we're going to keep coming back as well? Is that what you're asking?
Yeah. Because we believe that once we go back to God, it will never come back.
Yes. Krishna says that actually in Bhagavad Gita. Yad gatvana na vartante. And having once gone to my abode, Krishna says one never returns. So then I'm not sure exactly what you're asking.
No, where the other entities are coming? You said it's keep coming and going.
Other entities, non-devotees keep coming and going. Devotees don't keep coming and going. Although devotees are willing to keep coming and going. This is the thing. Prahlad Maharaj, he's willing. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Prabhupada has already quoted him in the purport. Mama janmani janmani ishware. Bhavatad Bhaktir. May I have a Haitagi Bhakti to your lotus feet? Birth after birth. What does that imply? Birth after birth. It implies that he's coming back, doesn't it? So devotee is willing to come back. He's not insistent on liberation, but if Krishna gives liberation, that's Krishna's discretion. But a devotee is detached. A devotee only wants devotional service. He may be in heaven or in hell, it doesn't matter. He doesn't notice Because he's so deeply absorbed. In so deep in that ocean of bhakti, he doesn't even notice what's happening on the land. It's like that. This is liberation. How can there be suffering in such a position? Srila Prabhupada said, Bhagavatam says, just like a person who's intensely absorbed in something, if a parade goes by outside making all sorts of dhum-dham, he doesn't even notice because he's so deeply absorbed. This is Krishna consciousness. Or another example, a drunk person, somebody who's intoxicated, he also doesn't notice. He becomes oblivious. What's happening? He's absorbed in his own whatever it is. You see? So Krishna consciousness, it inoculates us against all the miseries of this material world. Otherwise, those miseries are inescapable. So devotee doesn't mind. If I come back again, that's okay, because, you know, for a devotee, it's all the same. Narayana para sarve na kutashchana vipyati svarga apavarga narakeshu api tulyartha darshana. He sees equally. If I'm going to heaven, if I'm going to hell, if I'm staying here, it doesn't make any difference. He is absorbed in bliss, eternal bliss. That is vimukti, vishesh mukti, the best liberation. Is that okay? Yes.
Can you give some examples of how a devotee may be bewildered or attracted by pious activities in neglect of devotion?
Yes, because we have a material body. The material body has certain needs, and not only needs, but we actually have obligations that we have to perform. Especially those of us who are married, householders, we have to support our families, we have to work, we have to engage with the material energy, we have to collect money, we have to do so many things. Directly interacting with the material energy. So the tendency is already there in the heart, but with the association, along with the close, intimate association, comes the temptation to try to enjoy these things for ourselves rather than offer them to Krishna. That's how karma can snag us. Another tendency, which is probably more prominent in India than it is here, is that we fail to make the distinction between ordinary dharma and Krishna consciousness. Many people, this is one of the aparadhas against Harinam, actually. When we consider that Krishna consciousness is just another mode of dharma, but it's not. It's a very transcendental category. It's completely beyond both punya and papa. So that's another way that karma can distract us or mislead us. Jnana, as we mentioned, it's even worse, because with jnana, we may be reading Bhagavad Gita also, but our interpretation is wrong. And because we're getting some genuine spiritual enlightenment from that, then it's actually much harder to shake that attachment than it is to give up material attachments. The more substantial, spiritually substantial your life becomes, the more difficult it is to give up that mode of existence. And the jnanis, Srila Prabhupada said, this is the last snare of Maya. If we don't have a problem giving up jnana, it's because we don't have any of it. We don't have the adhikar to begin with. But actually, once we actually get a glimpse of what that means, brahma-bhuta jnana, atma-jnana, it is not an easy thing to give that up. And give it up means to give it to Krishna. The point is devotion. Karma is fine, jnana is also fine, but they have to be given to Krishna. This is the point. The temptation at every step of the way is always to embrace these things as if they were separate from Krishna, or to embrace these things for our own purposes rather than Krishna's purpose. This is the great danger. And it applies equally to jnana, karma, and yoga, except that maybe more people are karmis than jnanis, or rather vikarmis. Is that okay? It's a general question, so I'm giving a general answer. Satisfied? Sal Pratishat? No. Sal? You want to hear more? Well, how much time do we have?
Time is up.
Okay. It seems like he's about to blow a conch shell. Okay, so we have a few minutes? All right, let me take, if there's any other burning questions, otherwise nobody's losing sleep over anything. No more questions. I can't see. You have to raise your hand high if there's another question. You're pointing at somebody, but there's nobody there. Okay.
The translation to the second verse you mentioned, there is a part that said the calmness of the devotee.
Yes.
Could you describe the calmness of the devotee?
We described that. Upashamana, upashamadikam. To become peaceful. And peaceful means to not be pushed around by the material energy. When we get good and bad reactions, we become swayed. When everything goes very nicely, we become foolish and giddy and intoxicated, inebriated by that. And when everything is suffering, then we become completely dejected and overwhelmed and depressed. And you see, our minds are not pure. They're not peaceful. But a devotee becomes calm like the ocean. This is described in Bhagavad Gita also. Like the ocean. So many rivers, and not only rivers, but very filthy rivers are entering into the ocean. And yet, a devotee doesn't get disturbed. Even there's what, a 300,000 mile garbage patch rotating in the middle of the Pacific Ocean? The plastic waste of the entire world, everybody's guilty for this? You know, the ocean doesn't get disturbed by it. The devotee has to be like that. You will be abused, definitely. You will be dejected sometimes. You will be elated sometimes, but you have to practice. What does he say? Yam hina vyathi antyete purusham purushartha arshabha. Purusham. What is it? You know this verse? Anyway, somrathatvaya kalpate. He says, Krishna says, when a person is not elated by good things happen, he's not dejected by bad things happening. He remains peaceful and steady in both. In his devotional service, this is the implication. Then that person is eligible for liberation. And the liberation that he gets is not like ordinary liberation, it's vimukti, bhakti liberation. This is the point. Is that okay? All right. Yes?
So I was just thinking, in the purport it is mentioned that if everybody goes back home, back to Paris, and the world would become vacant. But we were saying that other people will come, other living entities will fill up this world.
Yeah, there's a sucker born every minute, in other words.
So Krishna wants all the living entities to be with him.
Yes.
Does it mean that Krishna's desire will never be fulfilled because there will be living entities coming in?
Well, his desire is constantly in the process of being fulfilled. It depends on us. We were discussing this on the way here. Love. In love, both partners are equally important. You can't say one is more important than the other. They both enjoy equally, according to the Rasa Shastris. You see? So what the living entity wants to Krishna, that's just as important as what Krishna wants to us. The devotee is always thinking of Bhagavan, and Bhagavan is always thinking of his devotees. See? So if the devotees fall down from Golok Vrindavan, they come here, and Krishna, of course, is very concerned about it. But they will come back. They will come back. It takes little time. Okay, yes?
So devotees are not interested in liberation, and one of the liberation is samipya.
To be with the Lord.
But first devotees are gopis and they always are asking for the association of Krishna.
Yeah, therefore we say devotees are not interested in non-devotional liberation. This is a better way to put it. The devotees can accept, there are four kinds of liberation that devotees may accept if it's favorable to their devotional service. This is the key. When it is favorable to devotional service, then they may accept. But if it's not favorable to devotional service, then they're not interested. They don't accept. Just like Sayujyamukti means to merge into the Brahma Jyoti effulgence, that is not favorable to devotion, because you're erasing all distinctions between the worshipper and the worshipped. It's not favorable. The devotees reject that. You see? So devotees are not allergic to liberation. They may accept liberation, but only when it's favorable. This is the point. This is the principle. Okay? Anything else? Okay. Thank you very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.